you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is John Drummy. John is a freelance broadcaster and general manager of Kerry Mental Health. Sit back and enjoy the show. All right, so John, thanks a million for coming on today.
Delighted to be here. Thanks, Ian.
Really appreciate it. I suppose for all my guests, you might have heard a few of them. I always like to bring it back to their, I suppose, childhood. What was your childhood like? Did you grow up in Tralee, or what, were you into sports or what?
Well, let's. I suppose we start at the very beginning, as Julie Andrews said. It's a very good place to start. I was born in Dublin, and we lived in Sutton Park in Dublin for the first 4 years of my life. I have an older sister, Anne Marie, and two younger sisters. So Sarah Jane was born in 1975, just before we moved to Tralee. So from a growing up perspective, you know, all my cousins and my relations, they were all in Dublin, and you know, it would have been a close family setting. Dad was very busy. He worked in Bord Banya at the time, which is the Irish Dairy Board, or NUA, I think it's called now. And Mum was full-time mother at home, and I went to preschool very near my house, and my sister went to primary school. And I always remember, you know, going to Malahide, and the beach in Malahide was always a lovely place to go, and I still have a very strong connection there. And my grandparents lived across on the other side of Dublin in Kilmacud, near where the Kilmacud Crokes club are.
Football team.
Yeah, great team. I think, aren't they the All-Ireland champions?
Two nights ago, actually, I seen them on TV.
There you go. So near enough to that. And then we moved down to Tralee in 1975. And I remember Dad brought Anne-Marie and me in his car, and Mum brought Sarah Jane in her car, and she was in her little carry cot. Of course, this is in the days when you didn't wear seatbelts in the back seat and you didn't have booster seats. Yeah. And we had quite an eventful journey. I'll never forget it, because a boulder fell from the back of a truck in front of us on the way to Tralee, and it was unavoidable. So Dad hit that, and we kind of went in off the side of the road. Now, it wasn't a serious collision, but I remember saying afterwards, I think I'm eating an eggshell. As it turns out, I was eating a bit of my tooth. I'd broken a bit of my tooth. Yeah. And I wasn't badly hurt. Nobody was badly hurt. And as it happens, a couple of Dad's colleagues, because he was moving down to work in Kerry Group, a couple of them happened to be on the same route, and they came to the assistance, and that was grand. So that was a pretty early childhood memory at the age of four, literally crash landing in Kerry. And we moved to Tralee anyway, and I started school in Balloonock Primary School. Miss Galvin was my teacher, and I went into Sister Ursula, God rest her, was in high infants or senior infants, and then Sister Redempta was my teacher in first class in Balloonock. And then we moved, and then in those days you went to a different school. I went to CBS, then the boys' school in Tralee, and did my primary education there, or at least I went to school. Whether I studied or not is another story, and you'll probably see that's a common theme. Maybe
what
throughout.
What would have been your favourite subject in school?
It begins with N. It's called none.
None.
I had I wasn't very good at maths. I wasn't very good at Irish. Well, able to chat. Gift of the gab, as you can probably hear and as people know. I just had no interest in school, really. I enjoyed the crack. I was the smallest in my class. I think I remember speaking to Joe McGill about this. I was bullied quite a bit due to my height and being the smallest, but
really,
as they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger and more resilient. So I was no angel either. I'll say that as well. But no, growing up, I grew up in Ardnalee, and I'd say in Ardnalee there could have been up to 50 children from all the families on the road. So, you know, when I look at where we live now and our children, there aren't any children on the road, really, where my children are growing up now. And it's just, I suppose, the circle of life that in Ardnalee at that time, there were lots of young families, and we played soccer on the road, we played tip the can, and we played breakaway and rounders and the arguments.
You can't beat a game of tip the can.
You can't, and the rows and the arguments, and even, you know, then, like, our back garden was the epicenter for every sport that was on TV. So if it was the Dublin Horse Show, well, then we had the Dublin Horse Show in our back garden. We'd make jumps out of it, and I would have been maybe the eldest out of our group of friends. So because I was the eldest, I got to be Eddie Mackin, who was the best show jumper at the time, and my best friend Martin, who was next down, he would have been Paul Darrow, who would have been the second best show jumper at the time. He just picked the dregs of everybody else. So we had great crack doing that, and we had Olympics in the garden, and we'd have the World Cup, and Wimbledon, we'd play tennis on the road, and then you'd have the rows over whether the ball was under the rope or over the rope, and that was in, no, it was out, and you know, just typical childhood crack and friendships and feuds and fights and making up again. It was just
all different
to many others, I'd say.
As after secondary school and stuff as well, you got a degree in journalism in DCU, I think, did you?
I did, but that wasn't actually till much later, Ian, because when I did the leaving, first of all, I repeated the leaving. It's a funny story. I actually went to the SEM for 2 days after the intercert, as it was, or the junior cert as it is now. So the class that I got into in the Green wasn't doing Honours Irish, and I wanted to do Honours Irish. Now, be careful what you wish for, because I ended up failing Honours Irish the first time around in my leaving anyway. So I said, and the option was there, thankfully, that I could, if I wanted to, go to the SEM, because it might make me study, it might make me focus. So I went to the SEM on a Sunday. Poor mum was heartbroken. The three sisters, I'd say, were delighted to see the back of me. Dad was obviously putting on a brave face. So I went to the SEM on the Sunday, and I went into class and all the classes on the Monday. So I was quite homesick anyway, and I wasn't too impressed with what was going on.
Did you travel over and back every day on the bus?
No, I went full blast. I went in as a boarder. So it was like ripping off a plaster. I was straight into it. Wasn't too happy with the way things were being done from my perspective on the Monday. And then on the Tuesday, it was similar. And with one class left, I said, to hell with this for a game of marbles. I just got up. And I walked to Farran 4. I left everything behind me, and I walked to Farran 4. And I mean, it's a bit like Forrest Gump, and he started the run, and he just kept on running. So I got to Farran 4, and I went into a phone box, and I didn't turn into Superman. I reversed the charges, and I heard the operator saying, "Would you accept a reverse charge?" Called from John, and Mum was there. Said, "Yeah, yes. Hello, love. How are you?" And then I come on the phone. I'm in Farran 4. Falling my eyes out. So she said, hang on a second. Apparently Dad was in the car before the phone was down. And in fairness, he came out to Farran 4, opened the door, I went in, and the arm around me, and I was back in the Green 2 days later. So
you were over and back like a boomerang, so...
Yeah, so that was that story. And then I did the leaving, and then repeated the leaving. I repeated four subjects in the leaving. It was the last year that you could combine your subjects. And I got my Leaving Cert results in before going to the Simple Minds concert in the RDS. It was a year of teacher strikes, so the results were late. What has changed? And I got the results, did okay. And I didn't want to go to college. I just didn't want to study. I didn't want to do anything to do with learning ever again, really. That was just my philosophy, my attitude. It was just different.
I met in my own heart, so...
It was just, you know, you have to be interested. But now I'm a father, I realize the importance of it. So, look, you learn as you go. So I got into the RTC, as it was, MTU now, and I did mechtronics. Now, don't ask me why. I think it was probably because it was the easiest course to get into points wise, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to anyone who has done it, but it just was the one that I could get into. I could live at home, I could get a grant, and but you know, that was fine. Realized after a month that this wasn't for me. I wanted to do computers, so I got into a course in Bray in County Wicklow, that refers to Dad again. He fought out for it, and that went horribly wrong. It just didn't work out either. And then I ended up doing a Start Your Own Business course with FOSS, and I'm forever grateful to Paul Dolan for identifying that that wasn't for me, but there was an opening perhaps in Radio Kerry for FOSS to pay the remainder of my time with them while doing a work placement in Radio Kerry, which was only not even a year old at that stage in 1991. And that's how I ended up in Radio Kerry. And it wasn't until 1996 when I realised, you know, because I always wanted to be a commentator, and I've spoken about this before on Radio Kerry, and I thought the best way to do this would be go and do a degree in journalism. So I made a decision to quit my full-time job in Radio Kerry and go to DCU, did the interview. I didn't tell anyone I was doing the interview. I didn't even tell my parents. So I did the interview, was accepted, then told them. They were delighted. Anything, you know, to further my education or to start my education, as it probably was. And I went off and did that, and I haven't looked back really, and it's a great experience. And again, while I didn't like studying, I know there's a lot of people who might listen to this and they might have children at home and they're struggling with studying and wanting them to do it, they'll get there in the end. And yeah, I know I put a bit of pressure on my own eldest, especially because she's got junior cert this year. I have to kind of step out of that bubble for a second and say, look, she will be fine, but you still need to do a bit.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I'm here today with freelance broadcaster and general manager of Kerry Mental Health, John Drummy. Exactly, and I think that school is either for you or it's not, like, and I would have been the exact same. Yeah. I absolutely hated the learning and work side of it and stuff. You mentioned there that you were in Radio Kerry for a while. Fiona was telling me that you had a late night music show, and you worked a bit in ad production as well, did you?
I worked a bit in production. There is no such thing as working a bit in production, as Alan Finn will confirm. Production continues long after the people who get the ads for the production are gone home, because it is a very important but very difficult job to do.
It wouldn't run without them, really, the stations, or wouldn't?
Well, listen, it's down to the quality, because people have a very short attention span. So you want, if you've got 2.5 minutes of advertising space per quarter hour, and you don't want somebody to switch over to another channel, for starters, and you want to tell your advertisers that people are listening to Radio Kerry, and you want them to be able to go in and buy the product or get the service that's been advertised because they heard it on Radio Kerry. So while you can have somebody selling the airspace, it's really down to the script and the creativity and the voice and all of those variables coming together just right. And I used to do that with John Slattery. I learned an awful lot from John, who's his own production company now on television, and you might see him on television with his wife and three beautiful daughters called Are We There Yet? It was on Virgin Media recently, fantastic holiday program. And I learned so much from John, but we won radio advertising awards for our script writing and for our production, and that's good for the radio station, but it takes a lot of time. And then when you're doing a nighttime radio program on top of that, so the day would have been, I could have been in at 11 o'clock in the morning working on production until the ads were done, especially ones that had to go out maybe the next morning, so they needed to be scheduled. And this was all done on reel-to-reel and on cart, so it was way more cumbersome and time-consuming than it is now. Not to say that it isn't time-consuming now. And then I needed to then take a break. Then I had to completely change my focus to presenting a 3-hour music program, which wasn't playlisted. So I would pick out my own music. I'd go into the music library And because it was a nighttime music program for mainly younger people, so at least it was fairly easy to get the idea of what to play. And I might walk down to studio with 40 CDs or big loads of CDs on top of a few maybe album LP records down to studio. I might play maybe 40 songs in the night. There was an hour of love songs in the, an hour of love songs in the middle of it, loads of requests. We had the Dear John letter.
You mentioned love songs there. Did I read up somewhere, did listeners send in Dear John letters?
They did, the Dear John. We revived it during COVID. I was covering Friday evenings and Saturday mornings during COVID, and I had found a bundle of Dear John letters, and it was just enough to go through maybe 14 weeks of the period that I was on the Friday evenings. And people would just write in. Now, I'm sure half of them weren't true. I love this guy, or I love this girl, or I met her at the disco, or there's a girl in my class, or there's a boy in my class. Typical teenage young love type stuff. I'm sure some were quite funny in that they were slagging each other off as well. There is a famous one where I absolutely cracked up laughing reading it. I said, I'll try this live, and I found that letter. I have that letter at home. I don't have the recording of me cracking up reading it, unfortunately, because it's actually quite funny. But I found the letter. We were cleaning out Mum and Dad's attic. They were doing a big tidy up job at the start of started this year. And I'd say the amount of Dear John letters that I found in the attic, I could do, I'd say, two years of programs on the cut of what I have. So maybe there's an opening there for a sponsor. Who knows? It would be worth doing, I think. But that's another conversation with Fiona, maybe. There are so many there. And the fact that people used to take the time, and then here we are in 2022, and people are sending three-word text messages, and everything is done on TikTok, and people are, I can understand, you know, like my sister sends messages by voice on WhatsApp, and you go, will you just text me? Will you just send me something that I can read? I don't have time to listen to these things. It just shows you how times have changed, and it would be very interesting to invite people to write in their Dear John letters now. I just don't know, would it work now?
Probably wouldn't.
That it used to. They picked 10 of their favorite love songs, and I would have picked two of them then to play after reading out their letter. And it's a piece of Kerry lore in a way, and from what I have on file, I could do it again based on those, and it'd be a trip down memory lane without question. And then on air till 1 o'clock, and the station used to close down at 1 o'clock, and I used to play The Lonesome Boatman, which was by the Furies and Davy Arthur. That was the original closing down tune from my predecessor Pat McDonald, who was the first nighttime presenter, to whom I owe an awful lot. And I owe Pat an awful lot for helping me get into radio, Kerry.
It's crazy how things have changed. Like you were saying, you wanted to be kind of a commentator and stuff. Was there, you kind of dipped into different areas and different roles in radio, Kerry. What was, I suppose, the most enjoyable behind the scenes that you liked out of all of them?
I'm trying to think. Oh, that's a tricky one, because there have been so many different occasions and moments. Because when I came back to Radio Kerry in 2005, it was in a news capacity. I had worked as a news editor, and I'd worked in INN in Dublin from 97 to 2001. And then I was news editor in Carlow Kildare Radio, as it was, CKR-FM, based in Carlow. And then
James,
I went
to... were probably more modern then as well, John, were they, when you came back?
They were and no, I had been working through that transition in technology anyway through my time in INN and in CKR and in Clare FM, and then back to Radio Kerry in news. And then I started presenting the half one to half two slot that Deirdre does, or it's up to half three now. That was a slot that was there when I was previously in Radio Kerry. Fiona McCarthy used to present it, and then it was revived when I came back, and I started presenting it then. I think it was in early 2006, and from half one to half two, straight talking, we called it. And that was an interesting programme to do. I managed to get my commentaries. I did my first two commentaries on Munster in the Heineken Cup final against Biarritz in 2006 and against Toulouse in 2008. So I have a 100% success rate for Munster in Heineken Cup finals because they won both of them. The first one, I had Mick Galway beside me. You know, to have we were the envy of every commentary team that was in the Millennium Stadium because Munster won, having lost two finals previously, and Mick Galway was there, and everyone was straight to Mick for interview, for reaction afterwards, and so it was Radio Kerry they were coming to. That was fantastic. And again in 2008, in terms of all the things I did, I think maybe one of the most memorable experiences was when the Eurovision was in Mill Street. All the delegations, all the singers, all their party, they stayed in Killarney.
What year was that, John?
That was in 1993. So I was sent to Killarney for the week. I stayed in the B&B on New Street, and by day I went out and about and I followed all the different delegations. I got to meet Terry Wogan, God rest him, and Pat Kenny and Gay Byrne as well, God rest him, and all the singers, and Sonia, who came second, and Niamh Kavanagh, who won it, and got to meet all of them in the build up. I went to a late night party in the Glen Eagle. It was a Euro club. Big Ger Sullivan had the karaoke going, and you'd all the backing singers from Eurovision. They were the singers on the karaoke. Oh my God, the talent was just phenomenal.
Really?
And I met Johnny Logan, Eurovision winner extraordinaire. And that was great. So I got to interview all these people during the day. Then I had to do the nighttime program, but I had to edit all those interviews while I was on air at night so that there would be a package to go out on Kerry Today the next morning at 9 o'clock.
At the same time being on air.
So while I'm playing a song, I had a reel-to-reel behind me, so I'm listening to that on one headphone. I've got the speakers on, so I'm trying to edit, and this is old tape where you had to cut it and stick it together and make sure that it was seamless and that there were no jumps or that you, so one of the most dangerous things was putting the tape back to front so that in the middle of an interview you didn't suddenly hear yes, speaking backwards. So that was that was a great experience, a really, really good experience. Then general elections are always so exciting, covering them. When Bertie Ahern resigned as Taoiseach, when the 7/7 bombings was such a, oh my goodness, that was such a tragic event in London, the day after the euphoria of London being announced as the host city for the 2012 Olympics. And then the next day you had the bombings. And I had a sister living in London at the time, or two of them living in London, at the time, and they came on air, and as did many other Kerry people living in London. It was just the rush of that news and trying to keep things going and being first with something or having something different to somebody else. That's just always a great buzz.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with freelance broadcaster and general manager of Kerry Mental Health, John Drummey. John has a very interesting story, and if you've missed the start of the interview, you can get it straight after the show on the Radio Kerry website, or you can get it on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. You started up your own PR, John Drummey Communications. You've worked with the likes of the Rosa Tralee, Kerry Airport, the Matter Private and stuff. Do you want to give the listeners an insight into what exactly you do?
Yeah, in 2008, I often get emotional. Ted Keane, who was a former colleague in Radio Kerry and a very good friend, Ted passed away in January of 2008. And Ted had been the communications manager with the Rosa Tralee at the time. And I'd been filling in for him on some of his MC duties while he was unwell. And then he passed away in January of 2008. And then Anthony O'Gara asked me, would I be interested in doing that job? So I thought about it, but I wouldn't have been able to survive on just that job. I needed to have something else. And there would have been a conflict of interest in doing that job and working in Radio Kerry, because it just would have been a conflict of interest. So I just tried to find a few other potential PR clients and succeeded in that, and was able to move from one to the other without it affecting my income. And that was really how that started. John Drummy Communications. I'm always grateful to Kevin Finn in 24/7 Cabs at the time, and Paul and Terry and Jim and Joe. You know, they took me on the day I left Radio Kerry. I got the call asking me would I do PR for them, and very happy to do it and very grateful. And then I started just build a portfolio of clients, different, you know, from the legal sector. I work now on a freelance basis with Matter Private Network in Cork, and I've worked at Bolivera Day Centre for older persons in Tralee, and Kirby's Brogan over the years, who would be very close friends of mine as well. And I've enjoyed working with them since they reopened in 2014. You've got Kerry Airport, has been a long-serving client of mine. And you know, it's good to have somebody who has worked in news do your PR, because you know how busy it is in a newsroom. You know what a journalist really wants, so you give them what they want. Obviously you're giving it from your perspective, as opposed to necessarily from a warts and all perspective. It's up to the journalist to ask the questions to get what the journalist wants, but at least by writing a press release or delivering something that makes the journalist's life that little bit easier and makes it more likely for it to get the airtime and the column inches or the airtime or whatever it might be, or the video space or the social media hits, then that's good. And that means they are spending their money wisely on hiring somebody like me to do that. And it's great to meet different people from different nationalities, like the Rose of Tralee. It was always a great buzz during the week of the Rose of Tralee, or the week leading up to it. And
do you know the more clients that you got, and say the names like the Rose of Tralee and the Matter Private in Cork, when other companies heard you were working with them, other kind of big names, did they take you on more quickly?
They would, to a point, but then I'd have to be mindful of conflicts of interest, and I'd need to also be mindful of not taking on more than I could manage time-wise, because effectively, you know, I'm a sole trader or in that capacity and work for myself, and didn't have the expense or didn't want the expense of having to hire somebody to I would be responsible for and who would be dependent on me then. And so you're just mindful of that. So, like, I had worked with the Bon Secours in Tralee first, and then when that contract ended, I then was able to work for Matter Private in Cork, and now doing a bit of work for them in Dublin, on the back of what I've done for them in Cork, which is maybe an indication that, thankfully, you're only as good as your last job, but so far so good. But then the pandemic came, and like so many other people, the work stopped, because it just did. Went on the PUP, and then thankfully Radio Kerry, the knight in shining armour, came back to the rescue. I was able to work on a project with the Broadcasting Authority funding on COVID related programming, which was very it was very fulfilling, and it was very moving. A lot of the stories that I heard, and the people I spoke to from their different perspectives of how COVID had affected them. And but during that time, because that was a kind of a short-term contract, there was no sport, so I couldn't do the sport, obviously, on Radio Kerry at the time, and delighted to be back doing that now. So I had to look at other options, and I reached out to Fred McDonough in Red Chair Recruitment, and I said, look, Fred, you know me. If there's anything you think that I might be suitable for, or that might be suitable for me for a job, let me know. And that's how Kerry Mental Health Association came about. And I was called for an interview. I made a presentation at the interview and on a strategy, a proposal, you know, about the organization. And it seemed to work, because I'm nearly 2 years in the job now as their general manager. And it's an amazing charity. It's an approved housing body. It's there to support people with mental health challenges and their families and their carers, and the housing is for people with enduring mental health challenges and mental illness, that they now have a place to live and have an independent living experience with some support from the HSE, obviously, and their social workers and their nurses. And
as general manager, John, I was going to touch on it. Are you kind of, what's actually involved as the general manager? Do you kind of foresee over most of the kind of running of the company, or how does it work?
Yeah, well, it is a company limited by guarantee, so I answer to a board of directors who are volunteer directors. It's a not-for-profit company.
Yeah.
So they double up as directors of the company, but they're also trustees as the of the charity. And I'm company secretary as well as general manager. So they have policies. My job is to try and implement those policies, and the ultimate policy is to support and find ways to help people with mental health challenges and their families and friends through fundraising, through education, through housing. And we also might support other like-minded organizations as well in that regard. So we would have four staff plus myself, part-time, one full-time along with me, and then three part-time. And so obviously you've the day-to-day HR issues that go with that. Something that I wouldn't have had much experience in, so I'm learning as I go in that regard. And we have our, you know, we in Kerry Mental Health Association, in our offices in Killarney, we've meeting rooms. Through the support of South Kerry Partnership over the years, we've turned what was an old cardboard box making factory into a hub. Where we have meeting rooms for community groups come in, musical society at a very low cost. It's a community venture. We've the Men's Shed. Killarney Men's Shed is on site. The Order of Malta are there too. The Killarney Classic and Vintage Rally Group are there, and it's a great place. Our Ross Cafe is open Monday to Friday from about 9 o'clock each morning, and people who are maybe clients in the mental health services or just ordinary Joe blogs, they can come have a coffee, have their lunch. It's great value for money. And I always kind of bring it back to the five ways to well-being, which are connect, be active, take notice, keep learning, and give. And Kerry Mental Health Association does all of those in some way at some time. The connecting happens at the cafe or in the Men's Shed, or even when we run an event, a mental health first aid training event, or being active by just the whole act of getting out and moving and giving, you know, giving our time and giving our energy is so important, and so many people benefit from that.
It's something that I suppose we've kind of talked about enough. Mental health, it's such there's a stigma around it.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with freelance broadcaster and general manager of Kerry Mental Health, John Drummy. If you've missed the start of the interview, you can get it straight after the show on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section, or you can now get this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Did you find over the lockdown that people were seeking help more with, say, you know, during COVID? Because I know a lot of people I've talked to, and they said that the lockdown had an effect on their mental health. Did you see an increase in people reaching out during COVID?
Yeah, you see, the way it happens is people wouldn't necessarily reach out to us. They would reach out to the mental health services, and we would help the mental health services. So let's say you have a day center, and people who are clients of the mental health services, who might be living in hostels or who might be living in their own homes, who might go for their treatment or just for interaction and medication, these centres struggle to provide activities because the funding isn't there. So let's say in Tralee, in the day centre in Tralee in Killarden, we had a meeting there yesterday, and there's a music therapist. He comes in once a week, and it's Kerry Mental Health Association's fundraising or national lottery funding that we would have got on behalf of the day centre, that's what funds that person providing an hour of music therapy to, it could be five, it could be 10 people, and the difference that that makes to them. But the peace of mind that the staff in the day centre have, that they don't have to go up the channels in the HSC, which is a bureaucratic nightmare, to get the money to pay €80 for a 1 hour session. At least they know they can come to Kerry Mental Health Association, and we will happily provide through our fundraising the money for that. It could be as simple as there are some instances. There was a family that they had awful trouble with a septic tank, and there was sadly a bereavement in the family due to mental illness, and there were other mental health challenges there, and the hassle that septic tank was causing on top of the existing mental health challenges. We were delighted to be able to get on to Liam Brosnan and say, Liam, we'll cover the cost of you clearing that septic tank and unblocking the drains. And that's just the pressure off somebody. Or to pay a bill in the pharmacy. You know, somebody might have an outstanding bill. In one case, it was maybe about €50 to €60, which, that's a lot of money right now. But up until recently, you think, okay, that's only €50, €60. But that €50 or €60 was there this week, it was still there next week, it was there another week. So we paid it, and that's a pressure gone off that person, and we're delighted to do that. And there's volunteers that raise that money, and we've 9 branches around the county, in Tralee, Castle Island, Kilorglan, Kenmare, Killarney, Eva, which covers the Carrisavine and Waterville areas. We've got North Kerry, which takes in the Stowell Ballybunion, East Kerry, Rathmore area, and I always forget one, Dingle in the Corcaguina area as well. So we've volunteers all over the county, but one thing we'll find is that due to bureaucracy, there is a charities regulator, and due to the sins of other charities, new rules and regulations and governance have come in, and the amount of paperwork and dotting of I's and crossing of T's is actually impeding the development of charities, and people don't want to get involved and give their time because what they want to do is being hampered by what they're being asked to do by the charities regulator in terms of governance. And they don't have time to be doing that. And that's something that, and I've said this at a meeting recently, the charities regulator has a serious image problem in how they're getting the message across. And we'd be calling on the charities regulator to look at their messaging and to consider that in rural Ireland, where population is declining, charities are going to suffer as a result of maybe a heavy-handed approach towards governance.
Absolutely. Coming into more nearer times now, coming up now in about 2 or 3 weeks, and in October 8th to the 15th, I believe, it's mental health and kind of well-being awareness. What exactly will be going on throughout the county and around Ireland, I suppose, during this week?
Yeah, the Kerry Mental Health and Wellbeing Fest is in its 5th year this year, and it's a coming together of like-minded organisations. So we have a steering committee, and it's chaired by Donna Hennebry, who's the suicide prevention officer for Kerry with the HSE. And we would have people from NEWKD, South Kerry Partnership, MTU, the Kerry Sports and Recreation Partnership, the Volunteer Centre, KDYS, and many other organisations, and I hope I'm not leaving anyone out, and apologies if I do. Kerry County Council, of course, and Healthy Kerry are in there as well, and we get funding from them. So what we do is we provide a platform for people to organise an event for free, and the aim of each event would be to either give information about mental well-being or to do something that will improve your mental well-being and your mental health. So it could be from going for a walk, in the woods, it could be yoga on the beach, it could be an information webinar or seminar on the menopause, on men's health, it could be an aerobics class. Kerry Mental Health Association, what we're doing as part of it is we're running a mental health first aid course. We have four places left as of the time I speak to you, Ian. And they can go to our social media Facebook page to get the link to sign up for that. That'll be running from the 11th to the 14th of October from 9:30 to 12:30 in Killarney. Mental health first aid is a fantastic tool that we're trying to fundraise to roll out across the county for free. So there's a new website for the Kerry Mental Health and Wellbeing Fest. It's exactly that, kerrymentalhealthandwellbeingfest.com. It's a long one, but it's worth typing it in, because when you go to the website, then you'll see all the events that you can either register for or show up for on a given day and a given time. And it's a great opportunity again to put out the five ways to well-being, and that whole connecting and being active and taking notice and learning something new, or giving your time or giving a bit of energy in the interest of promoting mental well-being. And this year's message is to get across that my mental health matters, whether I'm talking to you, Ian, on this interview, or whether I'm going to the Listowel races, or whether I'm going home or going to work. My mental health matters no matter what I do. We've had, you know, you see Keith Duffy did a little video message from Boyzone, and he said whether he's on the road on tour or whether he's in the supermarket, his mental health matters. He's an ordinary person just like you, just like me. You did a video for us. You said, you know, able-bodied or disabled, your mental health matters, and I'm sure you have your mental health challenges in your life.
Absolutely. And I think it's only natural that everybody does have their own mental health challenges. Like, they can put on a front, a smiley face, but everybody's kind of fighting their own fight inside their head. So hopefully that week and the festival all go down well, and people can look it up online and website you just said, John. And that's it for the show. Thanks a million for coming on, and I learned a good bit about mental health there in general, and I hope the listeners picked up a few tools as well, what they can do. So thanks a million.
And it's a pleasure to chat to you, Ian, and congratulations on your nomination as well. I've been that soldier. Unfortunately, I haven't brought home a gold medal yet, so hopefully you'll get that gold medal at the IMROs.
Fingers crossed. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to John Drummy for coming on today and talking about his own story and what, I suppose, a lot about mental health and what he does as General Manager in Kerry Mental Health. We talked about the upcoming Mental Health and Wellness Week coming up from the 8th to the 15th of October, I believe. So thanks a million to John for coming on, and I hope you all took something from that interview, because John made a few very important points and I definitely learned something. If you have any questions or suggestions for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.